All right, so let's get started here. I'll bring my deck up here. And the name of our talk today is Windows Phone and Kinect Playing Together. So a little bit about myself. I've been developing software for over 20 years now, and I've done pretty much everything from small little embedded controllers that you might find in, railroad track scales or something like that, all the way up to some fairly large corporate decision support portals based on SQL Server. Been building mobile applications since the early days of Pocket PC, so I've got quite a bit of experience there. I also have my own company called Software Logistics LLC. We're based out of Tampa, and we actually help companies locally and across the United States actually build applications for the different platforms out there. We really like doing a lot of Windows Phone work, but we also do work for iPhone and Android. And finally, I'm a Windows Phone Development MVP. So today what we're going to do is we're going to build two applications. The first application is going to be a WPF or Windows Presentation Foundation application. This application is going to be used to display the skeletal data that's coming from Kinect. We're also going to use the same application as a server to send that information down to our Windows Phone application via JSON. That's the other thing that we're going to build is a Windows Phone application, and that's going to be running the Windows Phone SDK 7.1. The reason why we're using 7.1 is we need to use sockets to be able to stream this data in real time. So what you'll need for today's talk, you'll need the latest SDK that you can download from create.msdn.com. You'll also need a version of Visual Studio that you'll be able to create a WPF application. So the Phone Express version or the Windows Phone Express version that you can download at create.msdn.com won't allow you to create the WPF app, so you need a different SKU like Professional or Ultimate Edition. You'll also need to install the Kinect SDK, which I think it's at research.microsoft.com or somewhere like that. Just do a search on Bing search on Kinect SDK and it'll bring you right there. And then finally, you'll be able to download all the source code and everything that you'll need to kind of follow along at www.thewolfbytes.com. So I'll just leave that up a second there in case anybody needs to download the files there. But again, just go to that blog site there, you'll be able to download my slides, kind of the steps that I'll be going through and the source code that we'll be using. And these are the different kind of steps or sections that we're going to go through to build the application. The first thing we're going to do is we'll quickly go ahead and build a WPF Kinect application, like I mentioned. We're really not going to get into the details of how Kinect works or anything like that, but this should give you a good introduction and kind of get you started so you can take it and build other stuff with it. So again, this isn't really so much a Kinect talk. It's just kind of an overview of how these things pull together. So what we'll do is actually build something that will read the Kinect data, display it, and then provide it up to the Windows Phone application. Next we'll do is once we get the Kinect data displaying, we'll build a little socket server that will be used to send the data down to the Windows Phone applications. We'll create our Windows Phone application and then create the socket client within our Windows Phone application to be able to pull the data down. Then once we get the kind of the mechanism back and forth to be able to kind of just hook up the sockets and kind of set up that level of our communication stuff, then we'll go ahead and build a protocol, which will be based on JSON, just basically a string that it'll send out from the server down to the Windows Phone application. We'll render the skeletal data into the Windows Phone application. So now what we'll do is we'll switch over and go to Visual Studio, and that's where we'll spend most of our time today. Looks like it's connecting here. Give it another second or two. Taking a little longer to connect, but hopefully we'll get there fairly shortly. Looks like we made some progress here. Great. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to start off by creating a new project. And the project that we're going to create is a Windows Presentation Foundation application, and we'll just call it WP7 Kinect. Ooh, I guess we'll call it Kinect 1. I had the demo one that I was doing earlier, so we'll just call it Kinect 1. So So again, this really isn't going to get into a lot of details as far as creating Windows Presentation Foundation 7 applications or exam or anything like that. But we'll just go ahead and get started here. So the first thing we're going to do is divide our WPF here into two different columns. We'll make our size here 640 by 480. So now what we have is kind of two columns in our grid that we can work with. On the left-hand side, what we're going to display is just kind of a title, and then we're going to add a canvas in there to be able to render our skeletal data from Connect. We'll put these in the right spot here, I guess. So on the left-hand side there, we just have, like, see the title across the top, and then we just have a canvas that we'll actually draw some lines on to render our Connect data. The right-hand side, what we'll do is we'll add a stack panel, and it'll just kind of show us some information about the connected clients, and to be able to connect to this, we'll need the IP address, so we'll actually bind a list of IP addresses to the right side of our kind of our grid here. Okay, next what we'll do is we'll go in and create a simple little class here. We're going to put a little kind of boilerplate or some plumbing stuff in place here. We're just going to add a class called Common. Rename that back to Common again. And we need to add some colors to be able to display the skeletal data. I just grabbed these from the starter kit that came with Connect out there. So it's just basically going to pass in the joint ID, and it'll resolve back to a color that we'll use to actually render in there. And you can see we're actually kind of missing a reference for these joint IDs out there. To get those, what we need to do is go in and add a reference to the Connect SDK. We'll go under Browse. We'll come back up here to C colon, Program File 686. And somewhere down here, we should have the Microsoft Research Connect SDK. And we'll go ahead and add in the Microsoft Research Connect FDL. So again, the path here, let's just real quickly take a look at that. It's under C colon, then it's in the x86. And obviously, if you're not running a 64-bit machine, you won't see the x86 after that. But look for something called Microsoft Research Connect SDK. And we'll go ahead and add that as a reference. And what we'll do to resolve that is kind of a little trick. You hit the control and the period key, it'll actually bring up the potential namespaces that this joint ID could belong to. So if you don't really know where, kind of how to add the using statement in there or where it's coming from, I can hit control period and it'll go ahead and add that. So now we've got everything resolved there. We'll do the same thing for our brushes. And great. So now we should be able to compile that. And really, it's just kind of some boilerplate stuff that we need to get in place to be able to display all our phones and stuff like that. So let's go back to our main form here, and let's hook this thing up to Connect and see if we can get some skeletal data showing. So we're looking for something called runtime. That's the actual Connect runtime. Again, we'll hit our control period on your keyboard there. That'll actually bring up our namespaces. And we'll just call it Connect. And we'll add a little method here to be able to initialize it. And we'll add some initialization code. First thing we need to do is actually initialize Connect, and it's going to kind of tell us the different features that we want to have happen here. And we're just wrapped in the try to catch statement there. If we can't connect to our Connect, we'll get an exception thrown there. One thing to note that's kind of important when you're working with Connect here is that it needs to be hooked up pretty much to one of the primary USB ports on your machine. It doesn't do very well as far as running through a hub. Also, I tried running it through USB earlier, USB 3.0 earlier, and it didn't seem to do that work very well. So to be able to get it to hook up to Connect, like I say, just hook it up to one of the primary ports and you should be fine on that. Have a pretty good luck with that. So we're initializing Connect, and then we're going to go ahead and initialize the two different types of streams that we want. So we should be in good business there. Now we'll actually call that by linking it into the loaded event for our WPF page. So we'll say this.loaded, go ahead and generate an event handler for it. Tab plus equals plus equals tab tab, there we go. And then we can say init connect in here. So now what we've done is just basically just kind of wired in the loaded event to be able to initialize connect. And then what we need to do is add another event here once we've actually kind of initialized everything. So once the skeletal data is ready, we want to be able to add an event for that. So we'll say skeletal data is ready, plus equals tab tab. So now we've got another event on here. So every time that Connect says, okay, I've got some new movement data for kind of where the person is and kind of where their joints and their bones are and those types of things, it'll actually go ahead and fire this event. So I'm going to go ahead and just kind of add some stuff that we're going to need a little bit later on. I'll explain what this is used for later. So we're going to be using it to kind of dynamically build up the JSON that we send out to the client. And I'll explain a little bit more of how that's going to work later. And now what we can do is we can come in here. And with the event args that we have passed in here, it'll actually have a property on there called skeleton frame. And skeleton frame will actually have an array of skeletons that will come in. So you know if you've actually used some Connect out there, you can actually have more than one person being tracked for it. For our demo today, we're just going to look at one person's skeletal data, but right now what we need to do is kind of iterate through all the skeletons that it passes to us, and then find out which ones are actually tracking a person out there. We can do that by looking at the tracking state for the skeleton out there. So if the tracking state is equals the track, that means, hey, we have good data for that. I'm going to add a couple little utility methods in here that are necessary to be able to kind of scale the output that we get from the Connect engine itself into something that we can display on the screen. So this is just going to go ahead and take a joint that gets passed up from the Connect engine and then turn it into a point that we can display on the screen. And then finally something that's going to return a line or a set of lines that we'll use to render on the screen. So again, this is not that interesting stuff, but you can kind of take a look at that later. Here's where you can kind of do some fun stuff as far as like maybe changing some of the colors around, or if you want to be able to add in different types of shapes and so on. So those would be a good way to do that. A couple more methods here. And we're just breaking these methods out so later on we can use them to build up our JSON that gets sent down to the client. So one method to be able to add a bone, which is kind of the things that connect the joints out there. And again, if you've played around with the Connect SDK, you know that it returns basically a set of points out there that describe the different joints that are being tracked. And we need to be able to add both those joints in, but we also want to be able to add in connectors between those to kind of draw the bones that actually make up the person's skeleton. And what we're doing here is we can see that the skeleton itself is actually a canvas that we've added to our WPF form out there. So all we're really doing here is we're taking a line, which is a UI element or something that we can go ahead and draw to the screen itself and then add it to our canvas. And that's really how we're going to go ahead and do its rendering of the data. Okay. So the next thing we're going to want to do here is before we kind of go ahead and try to track everything in, we're going to clear out anything else. So what we're going to do here is really every frame that comes up, we're going to go ahead and draw the cat VS skeleton from scratch. Now we'll actually add the code in to be able to render our skeleton. So again, all we're doing here is calling our methods called addBone, which will actually draw the lines on them and then draw the joints on there to be able to actually kind of put a little blob or kind of a big dot for the actual joints of the skeleton that are being tracked at. And then finally, what we need to do is we need to put a little code in there to be able to properly shut down our Connect engine. And all we're going to do here is say if Connect is not equal to null, we'll uninitialize it, and that should be good there. And you can see up here what we've done in our try-catch blocks up here is if we weren't able to initialize it, we basically said Connect equal to null, then we go ahead and return out of there so that way we won't crash if, say, something we can initialize properly. So we should be set here. We should be able to run this now, and if everything works out right, we should be able to see. Yep, we're compiling. And looks like everything initialized properly. And as you can see, now we're actually rendering my image. I'm sitting down in the chair. That's why my legs look kind of funny there. And again, this is directly pulled from the SDK that you get when you download the Kinect SDK. All the samples and everything are there. So I kind of based this component of the application off of that. So if you want to get more details of how that type of thing would work, just look a little bit more into the Kinect SDK. So that's the first part of our application, is essentially writing our WPF application to be able to work with Kinect, to be able to extract all the bone and joint data and then draw that up to the screen. So do we have any questions before we move on here?
I don't see any questions so far.
Okay, sounds good. So now let's jump to the second section. What we're going to do is
One question.
Okay.
Will any of this work for the Xbox 360?
Will any of this work for the Xbox 360? It really won't. A couple reasons why. I don't think they've, I missed it recently here, I don't think they've actually released the Kinect SDK for doing anything on the 360. Also, the challenge with working with a 360 is it's kind of a closed environment. What we're going to do right here is open up or create a socket server that our Windows Phone application will talk to be able to stream the data to. And the Xbox, you really can't, get off of their network whenever you want to, like, do any network calls or anything like that. You pretty much have to play in their sandbox. So, no, this stuff really isn't going to work with the 360. All right, if there's nothing else, I'm going to go ahead and start the section part of our talk here, where we're just going to go ahead and build a socket server to be able to provide the data to our Windows Phone application. I'm going to go ahead and create a new folder here called server. In that, we're going to create a class called client, and this is really going to kind of encapsulate everything we need to do with working with the client. So there's going to be a few classes that we're going to build up here. And the first one is just going to be able to manage the connections out there, or manage the actual kind of interaction with the clients out there. So I'm just going to call it aptly named client. And a couple fields that we're going to add in here. First field is our socket, which is really just going to allow us to set up our communications, and then we're just going to create a simple little byte array to be able to handle the streaming of bytes coming in so we can process them. There's a couple different ways that we can work with sockets on both Windows Phone and in a WPF application. So in this method, we're just going to kind of use a more traditional one, work with sockets, and also a different way of doing it on the Windows Phone application. A simple event on there. So what will happen is we'll go ahead and put some logic in here so that if I try to send some streaming data from the application down to the phone and it fails, we'll fire an event back up to our kind of the container for this. So we'll go ahead and remove that client so it doesn't get called in the future. A simple little constructor in there and a couple properties that will be used later on. First one is just going to detect if any bytes are available to be read, and then a method to be able to read the bytes. And again, this is just kind of an overview session today. There's probably a lot of stuff that we'll be able to kind of go through if we really wanted to get into details of sockets, but it's really probably not the nature of today's talk. So again, we have this little debug statement on here. The way I like doing a lot of debugging when I'm building these types of applications, especially a lot of stuff that has a lot of interaction going on behind the scenes, is go ahead and kind of add debug statements that will work as we kind of run, just basically as we run the application. Another method in here to send our data. And then finally a method to be able to close and dispose of our socket. So you can see here, we try to send some data and it fails. We're going to just go simply just kind of close their socket out and set it equal to null and then fire an event back to kind of the container for all this stuff. So we remove it. We don't send anymore. Next thing we're going to do here is just create a simple little event arc so we can kind of pass our data back from our kind of the thing that's listening for connections to the thing that's managing it. So we'll go ahead and add another class. And the content of this is going to be the actual socket itself. Again, we'll go ahead and enter control period to be able to bring in our namespaces. Now we'll go ahead and add a listener. And so the listener is the thing that actually kind of listens on the port on our socket out there and waits for connections to come in. So we'll add a new class. Listener, make sure I spell it right here. Add a couple fields into our class. Let's do a namespace. And add an event down here. So when actually a client does connect in, once we get all this stuff put together, I'll kind of go through the full flow of how this stuff works. But right now, we just kind of need to build these plumbing and these pieces in place. We'll go in and add our constructor. Again, control dot, bring that in. So essentially, we're passing in which IP address we should be listening on and the port to be able to create our listener. And we'll create a simple method on here to be able to start listening for connections. And go ahead and add in our thread and our debug namespaces. So again, what's going to happen here is once we call the start method from the thing that kind of orchestrates and pulls all this stuff together here, we'll go ahead and create a new thread. So this will actually be running in the background. So obviously when we want to kind of be doing any of this type of logic here, we don't want to be running in the foreground to kind of kill the user interface. Go ahead and wait for the first socket to be accepted there. Once it actually something connects there, that method will return and it'll actually pass in the socket that we should be connected there. Then we just kind of pass it back to the thing that's orchestrating it. So it's pretty straightforward what we're doing here. And finally, let's go ahead and add in a stop method. This will shut down our socket from listening. And there we go. So now we have our listener in place. Now we have one more thing to be able to, that we need to build in here, which is our client manager, which actually kind of pulls it all together. What we're going to do with this, which is going to be kind of cool too, is actually build it so we can bind it to the user interface. So as kind of the activities happen within our client manager, it'll be reflected directly into our user interface. We can see what's happening from there. We'll add in a couple properties, a few properties up here, one to say that we're running. The other thing that if you're doing Silverlight programming, maybe you can see this where you implement something called iNotify. And what will happen is when we change properties within our client manager here, they'll automatically be reflected to the UI. So the UI will just kind of watch for any of these changes to occur and get updated automatically. We'll add a couple more properties on here. The first one is going to be a list of the clients that we're actually connected right now. And the final one is any clients to remove. So remember, one of the things we built in our logic here is if we try to send data out to a Windows phone that's connected to this application here and it fails, it can't send it through, we'll get an event from our client back to our client manager here. It'll actually add it to this clients to remove here, and then we can kind of clean up later. I'm going to add a couple properties in here that we'll use, to bind to the user interface. One is a list of the IP addresses. So when I first built this application, it was kind of tricky every time I was running the application because I wanted to figure out, okay, which IP address is this machine on so I can connect to it from my Windows phone. So what I did with this latest client here is actually built something so it goes out and tries to find the IP addresses that are on this particular device here, so it'll actually present them from the user interface. Makes it a little bit easier to run. And then we also have something down here called this connection status, which is going to go ahead and display the number of connected clients that are hooked up to the up to our server here. We'll add a simple method here that will allow us to go ahead and add a client in here. And again, all this does is the client that kind of came from our listener there into our list of clients, it's also going to kind of bind to the socket closed event so that if something does go wrong when we're trying to send here, we can actually remove it so we don't have a bunch of dead clients out there. Add a little method in here to be able to send our JSON across. what we're doing is for kind of delimiting the kind of the data sets that we're passing back and forth is a null terminator. What I'm doing here is basically saying, okay, I want to send this data across. I want to terminate it with a null, so I'm essentially appending an extra character at the end of it, and then just replacing it with the null down here, and then encoding it and sending it out to each one of the clients. And finally, we'll add a method to be able to start listening for the clients out there, which will in turn call our TCP IP listener. And looks like we need to go ahead and add in our namespace there. And then finally, go ahead and add a method to be able to stop our event listener. So that pretty much finishes for the kind of the communication server piece there. So again, I think there's a lot of shortcuts that I call it took as far as putting this together. To build something that's really robust, you probably want to do a little bit of locking on some of these collections and stuff like that. But you kind of get the idea of where we're heading with this, I think. Okay, so one of the next things I need to do is actually kind of wire that into the application itself. So I'm going to put a little constant over here saying which port I want to be able to run this on. And the port we're going to use is 9050. I'm going to come over here to our WPF application. And I guess one more thing I got to do there, I guess. Let's go back to our client manager itself. And I need to add in the constructor. That right about here, I guess. And what the constructor does is it goes out and finds the IP addresses on the computer and then goes ahead and sets up our collection for IP addresses so we can actually bind that to the user interface. It also creates an instance of our listener and then binds to the client-connected event. So when we do get a new client coming in, it'll go ahead and add them to our client list. So now we should be set. Now we can go back to our window over here. This is the main part of the application, kind of the main driver on it. We'll go ahead and add in client manager. And then in our constructor, we'll go and do up an instance of that. And then if you remember, like I was saying before when we were going through this, it actually implements iPropertyNotified changed. So what we can do is we can bind that to the user interface. And now what will happen is we'll be able to, let's get rid of that and change that great case on there. So we'll combine that to the user interface. So we'll be able to display any of the connection events and the IP addresses and those types of things kind of at runtime here. Okay, great. And then the final thing we need to do is in the onClosing method, we can come down here to the bottom here and simply say clientManager.stop. Let's go ahead and run this. So we got an error somewhere. Let's see what we got here. Client connected. Okay. Let's just switch over here real quick and say that this does indeed implement event args. Now we should be in good shape. Now we got one more thing going on here. Client manager, spell that right. Now let's give this a try again. And you notice here it's trying to punch a hole in the firewall, so it's going to ask us if we want to be able to allow access so we can actually listen on the port, and we'll say sure, we need to do that so we can hook up to it. As you can see here, we're actually displaying the list of IP addresses that's currently on this machine here, so it makes it really easy to hook up to our Windows Phone application. So I'm going to come back over here again. We have our skeletal data tracking. We also have a list of IP addresses up there to be able to connect to. So that's the end of section number 2 here. Do we have any questions?
I don't see anything.
All right. At the end, if we come up with stuff, we can hopefully have a little time to talk about them then. So
okay.
We'll jump to the next step here, which is going ahead and building our Windows Phone application. We'll say add new project, and we're just going to build a simple Silverlight application. We'll call it WP7. I'm on a different computer today, so I'm still getting used to this keyboard here. There we go. And again, like we were saying before, we need to build this with Windows Phone to target Windows Phone OS 7.1 because we are using sockets on the device and that's available in the Mango release. It wasn't available in the initial release. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do is just kind of go in and tweak our XAML on the first page here to be able to display a little more information about the application that we're building. So we're going to use the same type of layout where we have the top, kind of the top grid out there that will display what the title of the page is in the application. So we'll change that to be something a little more applicable. Windows Phone 7, Connect Flame Together, and the name of our application is Connect Client. The first page is just going to kind of be an entry into the application. We're going to put all our logic onto the second page. So I'm just going to go ahead and add a simple little button on here that will actually bring up the second page. We'll take that out for now, so we can find to that later. So really, this is just going to bring up a second page. We'll kind of do a little demo here as far as how to link in and do some simple navigation between pages here. So I'm going to create a little directory out here called Views. And we'll add a page in here called Skeletal Tracking. We'll just create a simple portrait page here. And there we go. Let's go ahead and just kind of put our XAML that we're going to be using for this view onto our page here. We're going to stick with the same type of layout where we have our title across the top. So I'm just going to put a different title on there. And it's not really tacker. I guess it's more of a tracker than a tacker. I'm going to go replace our grid with something that's going to contain canvas element, kind of like what we did before. This will be the actual spot where we go ahead and actually plug in the IP address to be able to connect to our server out there. And I'm just going to go here and add in our click event so we can use it a little bit later. Now we're going to go ahead and add in a second stack panel. On this stack panel, what it's going to do is actually going to go ahead and display our kind of our tracking, the skeleton tracking itself. So you can notice here we have this canvas tag, and that's where we're going to actually render the skeleton to. So again, we have our button here that's going to connect. We'll say click, and we'll add a new event handler for that. And then finally, one more thing, what we're going to do is just kind of go ahead and modify the menu bar at the bottom of our screen here so we can go ahead and reset our IP address. Down here. All right, so really what we've done is just kind of laid in the XAML. And again, you can take a look at this a little bit later to see how this flows together here, but it's pretty straightforward, I think. I think this actually should be, we'll go ahead and put this at our top grid. There we go. That's where I want that. And as you can notice, one of the things that we did down here is we actually added a menu button on the bottom here for going in and kind of changing the settings or the IP address. So to be able to link that and actually show an icon for that, we need to come up here and add that to our project. And then we'll say add existing item. And then I got all my stuff on D drive out there. There should be a settings. There we go. Very important thing. If it doesn't show up for you, one thing you want to remember is this needs to be actually set to content and not resource. By default, it comes in as a resource, but you need to set that to content. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to see your icon over there. So now we got our user interface created. We're just going to save that. Looks like we're set. And then now let's switch over to our code. And first thing we're going to do is come back to our main page here, and link in our button to be able to do navigation. So all I did was really just kind of click on the button and put the stub in place so I can go ahead and add some code in there. And the code that we're going to say is navigation service.navigate. And where we want to go is new URI. Come on. Views. And then we actually pass the string literal in of the path that we want to go within our application. Very important thing here too is we need to specify the URI kind because it can't necessarily interpret that. So we go with the URI kind dot relative. And if we don't do that, we'll get a navigation failed exception that gets thrown and handled within kind of the main app class within our application. So now if I spelled everything right here, let's see, we got views, skeleton tracking. Now we should be able to run this. So I'm just going to switch this over here and say set a startup project. Should start our Windows Phone application. And I can click on skeleton tracking, it'll bring us to our second page. Now we need to kind of start wiring up some of the stuff behind the application itself. Okay, so let's go back and exit. There we go. Now we should be able to start working on our application again. First thing we need to do is actually build the component of our Windows Phone application that will communicate with the server. So I'm going to create another little folder in here called Connect Client. And we'll start populating that with some applications out there, some different classes that will be able to communicate with the server. So we'll go ahead in the class, and we'll call it Client. It's going to implement iDisposable, which will let us kind of clean up any of the resources that we'll need to be able to create within our client here. We'll create a few different fields at the top. We'll add a string builder, which we'll explain how that works a little bit later. So it's kind of neat. The new mechanism, I've been doing a lot of socket programming for a long time. Once I started working with some of the socket stuff with Windows Phone 7, I know it's been in .NET for a while, but there's a new class out there called Socket Async Event Args that greatly simplifies what it takes to be able to write socket programming. So something would be really cool. So again, we use kind of a more traditional approach on the server, but here we're going to be using the newfangled approach, which really lets us just kind of respond to events to be able to manage the interaction between the client and server out there. Now we'll add in our constructor. Which essentially just takes in the address that we want to connect with and the port number. We'll go ahead and set up a property so we can actually do our connection later. We're going to go ahead and just create a simple private constructor here. And this is kind of a neat thing to do if you want to say the only time I ever want to create one of these clients here is if I actually pass in those parameters. So now the only way I'm able to create an instance of this is if I pass in a server address and a port number. We'll go in and add a simple method to connect. And then add in some constructors. So we're creating an instance of our socket async and event args, and we're setting the remote endpoint down there to the kind of the fields that we set for the address and the port number. Now we'll create our socket. And we will try to connect asynchronously there. So again, this really isn't going to throw any exceptions here. We don't need to have these, well, if we pass some bad parameters, and I guess we throw an exception there. But if we can't connect, this isn't where our exceptions will be thrown. What will happen is we'll actually get some events that get fired on our socket event arg that will tell us that, hey, we could not connect. And we'll show how those things work in just a second. So finally, what we need to do is we need to set just kind of a generic property on, on our socket there to be able to, or the event args to be able to have access to our socket. So now basically this user token here is going to be the actual socket that we're connected. And this is obviously something that would be kind of nice if you have multiple sockets that you have a manager, the same event handler. So now what we do is we go in and we add in an event handler on a socket event args to say that some type of an event has occurred on the socket that we need to handle. There'll be some more kind of case statements we drop in here eventually, but what'll happen is it'll say the last operation that was completed so we can actually handle that within our case statements. I'm going to add some method stubs in here that we'll be able to populate in just a bit, but For now, we'll just leave them empty. So the events that we really care about is processing the connection to the server, processing receiving data, and processing sending data. When those things have been completed, these methods will be called. And to call them, we're just going to add in our case statements. There we go. So now when any of these events have completed, it'll actually call these methods up here so we can do our specific handling. We're going to add in our implementation or finish our implementation of our class by adding the disposed method, which will essentially just close the socket out and make sure that everything is cleaned up just fine. Now we'll go ahead and build that, make sure that everything looks good there. That looks great. We can compile. It's always a good sign. So the way this is going to work is we're going to build this kind of standalone client out there that's going to manage the interaction with the server out there, and it's going to send events from this class that we're currently working on to the actual Silverlight page itself. So to do that, we need to do a little bit more kind of some plumbing code in here, add in some event diary implementations and so on. So the first add is a simple class. We'll put an enumeration in that's going to allow us to say what's actually happening with our client down there. So we're just going to call this client event types. This isn't going to be a class. It's actually going to be just an enumeration. Obviously, this could be all combined into one class, but we'll just break it out to keep it nice and simple here. And next thing we'll do is we'll add in a... class. We'll add in a client. Add in a client event error so we can actually resend the responses from our kind of our client into our application itself. It's going to pass in what the type of response is. Excuse me. Whether or not you've had an error, and then they type just a generic string that we'll be able to pass the data off with. And then the final event that we're going to want to be able to send is when we've actually received tracking data. So our client events are just basically saying, hey, I'm connected, I've disconnected, and so on. Now what we're going to do is add another type of event args that we'll be able to send from our client up to our Windows Phone application saying that we've actually received skeletal data. So this is going to be called received tracking data event args. There we go. And this is really just going to have one property, which is the actual skeleton data, which will actually be of type avatar, which we'll talk about. We'll add that in here in just a second once we start talking about the protocol phase. And we'll call that event args, so we can actually implement that. Now we're set there. Now we can revisit our client class and add in our two events. So now we have a couple events that we can call when certain things happen in our application here. All right, so now let's go back to our page itself and let's link in some properties to be able to save our IP address so we don't have to type it in every time we want to be able to connect. So first thing I'm going to do is go ahead and add in a property to get and set the IP address. And all we're doing is saving a key value pair in the application isolated storage settings with a key of IP address. So again, as we've done before, control period. And we're going to go ahead and try to get the string. So if we actually have an IP address that got saved, we'll return it. Otherwise, we'll just return an empty string. I need to add a simple little utility method in here because the text box by itself, even though we're going to use the input scope to be able to kind of limit it to text entry here, we need to put a little bit of smarts in there to be able to make sure that we have a valid IP address that's getting entered. So this is just kind of a little method that's going to help us out to make sure we don't get valid IP addresses. I'll go ahead and implement the save IP click. All it's going to do is it's going to go for each one of our text boxes there that have the IP address information, just kind of a digit from 0 to 255, and it'll pass it up into this method here, and then actually return it into a string. Go ahead and make sure that you have a valid IP address. Go ahead and format it as a string, and it says, okay, as long as we have it, then we can hide the settings box, and then go ahead and set our connection status, saying we're not connected to the IP address that we just entered, and enabled our connect button. Also, this is not the first time that we came through. We want to pull the IP address from the previous time, and to do that, we don't necessarily put that into the loaded event. There's actually an unnavigated to method that we're going to implement, so we'll say protected override unnavigated to. Go ahead and drop this code in there, and all it's going to do, it's going to go out and attempt to find the IP address, and if it's valid, we're going to assume that it was stored valid because kind of we have a logic going in there. Then we're going to assign the numbers to our text box there and set up the UI appropriately. Okay, the next couple things that we need to do are add some events back to our Kalani class again. So I'm going to come back here to our client class. I'm going to come down here to our connect, right after our connect method here. And we're just going to write some little helper methods here that will allow us to send events from our client into our application. You notice one thing that we have to do different here is we actually have to invoke methods on the user interface thread. When we get these events coming back from our socket event args down here, these will actually be coming back in a background thread. And if we try to directly send data to the user interface, it's going to fail, saying that yeah, I need to kind of call these methods on the user interface thread. We're just going to take care of that within our client class here. So we're going to call the method begin invoke on the dispatcher here. So by the time we actually handle those events in our kind of the front end or in the view there, we'll be able to just go ahead and just kind of directly do whatever we need to there. I'm going to go ahead and drop this code into process connect. We'll go ahead and resolve that. So what will happen here is that when we first say, okay, we tell this kind of this client class to be able to connect to our server out there, the event will fire, which will say that the last operation was connect, and we'll go ahead and process the connection. So now up here we'll say that did we have an error? If we didn't have an error, the socket error will be socket error success. So we can go ahead and execute this code, which will send the client event, which is saying we're connecting back up to the user interface. We're also going ahead and just sending connect and a file back up to the server itself. We're not really doing a lot of server-side processing of anything coming from the client in this version, but just for sending out there, so we could potentially do that. And then finally, we're just saying calling send async, which will actually send that string up there. So at this point, I think we just need to go ahead and bind to these events in our client, and we should be in good shape there. So I'm going to come back to our user interface, and create an instance of our client. There we go. And in our connection method, we'll come down here and check to see if our client is not equal to null. If our client has something there, that means we're currently connected. What we'll want to do is disconnect as opposed to connect, so we're just using the same button for both. Then what we'll do, if we don't have a client in there, then we'll actually put some code in here to be able to connect to the server, which will be this little chunk of code right here. Which will essentially set the status of our connection within the user interface. We'll create an instance of our connect client with the IP address that we entered. We attempt to connect, and we're just going to bind to the received tracking data here. Later on, we'll bind it to the user interface. The next thing we'll do here is bind to the client event, and if we have an error, just pop up a message box saying what the error is. If we don't have an error, we'll go ahead and set the text on here and then just kind of display some more information about our connection. The final thing that we're going to do is actually add a simple little event handler for our menu bar. So I'm going to come back here to our XAML. And go ahead and add a click handler on here. And what we're going to do here with our menu bar, the only thing with the button on the menu bar is showing and hiding the IP address. So for instance, if we've already configured our IP address and we want to go ahead and change it again, we'll be able to press the settings button on there, which will allow us to change our IP address. So now at this point, let's go ahead and run the application. One kind of neat trick for building these client server applications is running them both at the same time. So I'm going to go under solution and then under properties. And now what I can do is I want to say I want to do multiple startup projects. So I'm going to want to start the Connect client, and I'm also going to want to start the both the server and the client there. So now when we start it this time, I think I ran into this one before, didn't I? Let's go ahead and add our event args on here, and we should be in business. There we go. Now let's try this. So now we should actually start up our Windows Phone 7 application and our server here. So we'll go to our skeleton tracking. We'll enter the IP address, 100. And this is kind of a neat little feature of Windows Phone, is we can specify the type of keyboard that we want. We'll go ahead and hit save there. And it says not connected to 10. Well, I guess I need to change that, don't I? There we go. Get rid of that number. Now we have the right IP address. Okay, so now what I can do is I can say connect, and you can see over here, it's not all that terribly exciting, but we do have our connection up there where we're saying number of connected clients equals 1, and it's saying it's connected with 10.1.1.100. We'll disconnect, and we don't have the code in here to be able to handle the disconnection yet, but we get the idea. So it looks like we have communication between our phone application and our server. So I'm going to exit again. We'll close down this application. The next thing that we need to do is go ahead and wire in the data protocol that sends the data from the server down to the device out there. And again, like I said, we're using JSON for that. I think we'll hold off any questions until we finish the next couple sessions. We're getting towards the tail end of here, but we're at the end of our time here since we got kind of a late start. So what we'll do is we'll just finish up the rest of these slides, the rest of this application, and then I'll field questions. Does that work for you, Tracy?
It does.
Okay, cool. Great. Sounds good. So what I'm going to do over here is start building our protocol. We actually have to build this on both ends. So I'm going to come back to our WPF application. And in our server here, we pretty much had everything laid out to be able to make this happen. So I'm just going to come back to our component here. And first thing I'm going to do is go ahead and change our string builders here to start building up the arrays of JSON. There's a couple different ways that we could serialize and deserialize JSON. What we're doing on the server side is we're just using a string builder to be able to build strings up to be able to send it down there. On the actual client or on the WP or the Windows Phone side, what we're going to do is use deserialization. I'm thinking this might be a little bit quicker because string builders should be fairly quick for what we're doing here, and we're just kind of building this up based on the data. So a couple different ways to do it, but this is a decision we made on this end. So we started out with our string builders, building our opening kind of left bracket there to be able to say that we're starting a JSON array. And now I'm going to come up to our add bone method up here and build up a instance of a bone up there within the array here. So we can actually kind of build our completed a complete JSON later, passing in our string builder, so we're just kind of appending stuff as we're going here, which should be pretty fast. We're going in and adding the joint information. So really the bones are really just kind of a collection of the different joints out there that draw the lines between our joints out there. And then here we're just adding our information about our joints for each one of the kind of our joints from Connect. Finally, what we need to do before we send it down is we need to finish up our JSON arrays that got started up there. So I'm going to go ahead and say bones. So really what we're doing is we're going to change that last comma here. So with each kind of array element that we build together here, we're adding this kind of closing comma on here. We need to get rid of that because there's really not an element following that. So all we're going to do is just change that last component from that misplaced comma to a bracket. I'm going to add a simple utility method up here to be able to send the data. again, we'll need to go ahead and resolve that namespace. One thing that we're doing here is we don't want to overwhelm the client with too much data, because right now I think we're getting either 30 or 60 frames per second from Connect. And if we tried to send it down with every frame, that would certainly be a problem. We're just going to take a simple shortcut here, just to kind of simplify our code. And all we're doing is just sending it out every fifth frame. It would probably make sense if we were doing this for some type of production application to build some type of handshaking, so that until we know that the actual client itself had processed the data, we don't send more stuff down there. But for the sake of today's demo here, we're just sending out every fifth frame. The next thing that we need to do is we make sure that we only send data when we actually have data from the skeleton. So I'm just going to have a simple method on here called do we have got data or not? And if we got data, we'll set that flag equal to true, because at least one skeleton is actually sending readings back down. And then add a simple clause in there so we bail out of this function here if we don't have any data. Again, we're just kind of getting the idea here how this works. Okay, so that's what we need to do on the server side. So again, just real quickly here, what we've done is we're just creating a string builder that we're going ahead and building up a JSON array of data points that make up our skeleton data. Now we need to switch down to our client side and build in that type of data. I'm going to go ahead and build in a simple method here that's going to go ahead and parse a color. So one of the things that we're passing down in our JSON there is a hex string to be able to display the actual color itself. So I'm going to go add color or common. And it's just a simple little method on here called parseColor. All it's going to do is break a string up and return in a color. I've got some simple classes out there that we're going to include in here to be able to do the processing of it. So I'm just going to go say add existing items. And they are avatar, bone point, and joint. So we're going to add those in there. And really all these are implementations of our data contract, so we can actually do deserialization of the JSON string on the device down there. To be able to use these, I'm going to need to go ahead and add a couple references. First reference we need to add is system.runtime serialization. That's going to let us kind of use these methods here called data contract. And the next thing that we need to do is add another reference on here called System.serviceModel.web. If we look at our avatar method over here, or our avatar class over here, it's actually using data contract serializer. To use that, we actually need this the runtime serialization. So again, the runtime serialization is going to get us our data contract attributes that we can append on our class to do the serialization. And the serviceModel.web is going to get us our instance of data contract serializer to be able to do that. So we're getting pretty close here to be able to wrapping this up here. So now we need to add some more methods into our client over here. First method we're going to add in is a method called process.json. What it's going to do is actually going to take the string and kind of where we're at within our buffer there and attempt to be able to turn that into the right size of JSON that we can deserialize and pass back up to be able to render. We'll need that to be able to do our next little method here. And what we're going to do is actually implement our process receive. So what will happen is any time that we get data from the server out there, we'll actually call this event process receive. And if we have an error, then we're going to send a message back up to our user interface saying we have an error. If not, what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and find out where our null terminator is within our data that we got from our server out there, and we're initially setting it to equal to -1. If we actually find it in there, if we find kind of a null value or a 0, 0 within kind of the data that gets sent down, we're going to bail out of this little for loop here and say, okay, here's where our null terminates. Because again, since we're working with string with JSON, we don't expect to find any null terminators within our JSON, so it's a good way to use for a terminator. and implement another little method in here, a little chunk of code in here. That's going to go ahead and build the JSON that actually makes up the particular the data that came down. And if we actually have something that's not minus one there, then we're going to have to process the JSON. We'll say where the null terminator is in there so we can do some more work there. Otherwise, all we do is go ahead and take that string and append that into our response buffer so the next time, potentially, we'll have an update to complete our package. Finally, we need to clean that up or finish the step up here by saying, okay, we finished up handling this receive message, so now I'll go ahead and call receive async again to be able to get the next set of data that's coming from our device. Now we'll go ahead and implement a method up here for sending our event. Again, remember we're working on a background thread here, so we're just creating a little helper data here that's going to go ahead and call into the user interface on the user interface thread. We can come back to our receive crack need event, and now since we have avatar as part of our class, we can uncomment that. We'll come back here, and that should resolve that here. So all we're doing is creating an instance of these event args so we can pass it up to the user interface. The final step for our backend protocol here is going ahead and processing our JSON. What we're going to do here is turn any null terminators within our string here. Go ahead and append the portion of the string that got passed to our application or to our client down here before the null terminator, because that's going to make up the JSON that we need to actually kind of process and turn into our skeleton data. We check to make sure that our JSON starts with a left curly brace and ends with a right curly brace. And if we have that data, then we know we have valid JSON. We go ahead and create a new response buffer to start pulling the next string over. So we may actually have a string that comes over that contains two different packages of data, skeleton data. So we actually go and create a new response buffer so we can start building up the next string to be able to do the processing on it. And if we do have something there, we append the beginning of the next package that comes through there. And then finally what we do is we invoke this method here called send receive tracking data, which we just implemented over here, so we can go ahead and parse our JSON, returning an avatar there, and then send that event back up to the user interface. So now we pretty much have this client completed. The only thing that we need to do next is go ahead and process, just add a simple method in here. We're not really doing any sending of data, but we need to have this in place. So we'll kind of continue on with the process. So I'm just going to go say process data. So what will happen here is that once we send that first connect end of file transmission here, we'll go ahead and say, okay, successfully sent the data. Now we can call receive async, so it'll actually go ahead and start listening for data. That really kind of ends the portion of the talk where we're actually doing the protocols between the server and the client out there. So again, we're using JSON. On the server side, we're just using a string builder to go ahead and build up the string that makes up the skeleton data, which is all kind of the different points of the joints out there and the bones. And then on this side, we're going ahead and just deserializing that into a set of classes. So now we just need to wire this up to the user interface, and we should have something that works. And to do that, I'm just going to come back here to my skeleton page or skeleton tracking view. And we left this little chunk of kind of this little block of code in here so we can insert something in there. And what we'll do, let's go ahead and add in our receive data. All we're going to do here is go ahead and clear the canvas. So just like we did on the server side, we have a canvas that makes up our skeleton data, and we're going to go through each bone, which just so happens to be, let's go back and take a look at one real quick here, all the information to be able to kind of render the bone on there. So this will be deserialized. We also have a method on there called getLine. So we come back here, we can, let's go to the right screen here, then we can go ahead and add that getLine to the child of our skeleton there, so it should run. So now what we should be able to do, just go ahead and start the application again. We have our server over here. We don't have any connected clients. We'll go into the skeleton tracking screen. We'll connect to connect. Looks like we're connected. And now, once I roll back in the frame of the data over here,
we can see that we're successfully sending our skeleton tracking data from the client to the server. It may be a little kind of jerky when you're looking at it through the link client or however you're looking at it on the web out there. When I'm actually looking at it on my screen here in real time, it's actually tracking pretty darn close. There's just a very, very slight lag. Obviously, we're not going across any type of network here, but I've actually tried this running out in the field out there kind of with my phone and just kind of using the phone to be able to stream it, and it actually works pretty darn good. So that's really what we have as far as building something that will use Windows Phone 7 to connect to a server out there. So let's bring up. And I'll bring up my deck again. Then finally, here's all my contact information if you have any questions or anything like that. So that's all I have, Tracy. Thank you.
Thanks. So there are a couple of questions if you don't mind taking the
time. Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Are there any bandwidth limitations of the phone?
Any bandwidth limitations? Not really. If you look at what we're doing here, we're actually just sending a very, very small amount of data. I can't remember, I measured it one time. We're only talking about like 1 or 2K that gets sent across each time. Since we're not using something like XML, which is kind of a fat protocol, we're using JSON. That's kind of really, really trim, and it's just not really sending a lot of data. And so once we actually establish the connection, it actually works pretty quick to be able to send the data back and forth.
Okay. Why did you use TCP instead of UDP?
That's a great question. That's one of the things that I actually considered doing, because with UDP, what you could do is kind of multicast to different clients out there. I guess I just used TCP because it's just the choice I made, and we could use UDP clients out on Windows Phone 7 out there, so it definitely could be used.
Okay. Let's see. The next one is, would we need to follow any procedures to get a network app like this approved in the Windows Marketplace?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I really don't think there are any special type of procedures that you need to do. I guess what you would need to do is make sure that you probably made it a little bit more robust. We kind of took some shortcuts as far as doing some of the multitasking stuff between on the server, but the application itself needs to be robust so it doesn't crash, obviously. And I think there's some things, if we actually try to push this through the marketplace, that we do to kind of like harden up some of the connection logic and things like that. But as far as just in general, there's really not a lot that you need to do to build this type of application or kind of put this application through marketplace.
Okay. And then can the phone and laptop connect in the field over Bluetooth?
No, there's really no mechanism right now to be able to do any Bluetooth programming on the device itself.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, right now there isn't a way to do that. Hopefully in some future version, but not right now.
Perfect. All right. Unfortunately, I think Paulo is asking questions, but he can't hear, so I'm going to let him know offline that his question was answered.
Okay, that sounds good.
But I don't see any other questions, so I will thank you for presenting, and thank you everyone for hanging in there as we started late. And as Kevin mentioned, if you have any questions, please feel free to email him or Twitter him, or tweet him, I should say. Additionally, there is a form section where you can ask questions. So if other people maybe have the same question, you can post your questions there, and then I will also be monitoring that in case Kevin is unavailable. So either him or I will be able to answer questions and make sure you get those answers. And as well, you can also email wpdev@microsoft.com for any questions that you may have. So thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate your time, and thank you, everyone, for attending.
Thank you, Tracy, for listening. Talk to you later, guys.
Bye.